You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Ladies and gentlemen,
we invite your apprehensive listeners.
Welcome to the Afro Existential Podcast, a play and podcast in one. We're your hosts, Blaine Sparks Teamer and Indira Wilson. And for the next 25, give or take minutes, we ask you to take a moment.
Ladies and gentlemen,
and think outside your box.
Ladies and gentlemen,
welcome back, Blaine.
Thank you, Indira. Welcome back yourself.
This is exciting, and we want to welcome back everybody to episode 2 of the Afro Existential Podcast.
Thank you for coming back.
We hope that you've had an opportunity to listen to scene 2 of the wonderful play Dead Weight, A Journey into Afro Existentialism.
By this point, everybody should have listen to episode 1. So we're going to circle back and talk about episode 1 because we didn't really do that in the first go round.
No, we didn't. We were just getting through.
We were doing it with spit and tape.
Now we're pulling it together with duct tape.
With duct tape. Yeah, we've kicked it up a notch. And the feedback has been so positive.
And it's been nice to hear that people are enjoying the fruits of our labor.
So that's really nice.
To be able to create this art during this sort of global crisis and to be talking about what we're talking about, it has been so freeing and so helpful for me. And I hope what we're able to do is make it helpful for our listeners.
Yes, definitely. So let's kick off by talking about episode 1 so far and what's going on, like what's happening.
Crazy Georgina and her crazy son.
Are you team Georgina or are you team Oliver?
I go back and forth. Right now I might be team Georgina today, but usually I'm pretty much team Oliver. I'm like, let's get this body moved.
Right.
What about you?
This is very interesting. Normally I am team Oliver. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't see what the problem is. Like, let's make it happen. Now, the trick is that you need to know who your team is and who you're going to do it with. I would not do it if I didn't have the right person to do it with.
And that might be why right now I'm on Team Georgina, because I would worry about Oliver being a part of my team.
Okay. Why
that? There are some people, he's a little shifty and shady. She's protective of her child.
Right.
You know, she knows she didn't raise him right.
Right. Does she know? She knows. Does she know?
Right. But, you know deep down inside who your children are, but a mother's love makes you love them beyond their tragic flaws.
Right, right.
And so I think maybe that's why in this global pandemic, it's made me a little bit more aware of my support team, you know,
right,
and who
right.
I would trust, as well as, you know, who I don't want to evoke his name, but the person who is leading, quote unquote.
Right, right.
You think a lot about trust.
Right, right. And that really was a huge inspiration for this play, because I wrote it right when he was running for president. I don't want to say the person's name either. I feel it's like Rumpelstiltskin. Like, you know, if you say Rumpelstiltskin, it appears like he just shows up. So I don't want to give that any more power than I have to.
I actually kind of like the idea of calling him Rumpelstiltskin.
So it was like Rumpelstiltskin. And I was watching it happen and I was seeing what was going on. And I was like, this is about the normalization of bad faith, of deception, of lying. And it's being normalized by this administration. And instead of writing something that was big, I really wanted to make it smaller and personalize it and hopefully bring it down to a level that we can understand, because it's all the same thing. It's all about people who are deceptive.
Mm.
And so we know people, like, we don't have to look to the White House or outside of ourselves. We have it around us now because it's been so normalized.
Well, Blaine, can you explain what bad faith is?
I would love to. Give me a beat.
What is bad faith? Bad faith is intentional deceit of others or self-deception.
It is self-deception.
It is a violation of basic standards of honesty in dealing with others. Basically, it is being two-faced. In existentialism, it is a refusal to confront facts or choices.
It is a refusal to confront facts or choices.
It is self-deception.
Well, I think you explained it very, very well. Now, can you tell me, though, in regards to bad faith, can we talk a little bit about how Georgina and Oliver are exhibiting bad faith?
There are so many examples where it's being done. Georgina is constantly saying to Brady, you know, I don't know how you can watch these horrible shows. You know, when did other people's misery become entertainment? Like, this is just so horrible. But clearly, we now know that Brady is not watching these shows. Georgina's watching the shows, right? She has been saved. She's going to church. She accepts the blood of Jesus. But at the same time, she used her Ouija board to speak to her ancestors. Right? That's not in alignment with each other. You know what I mean? No, the main way is she's baking a cake for the church fundraiser, but her husband is sitting there dead in a chair, and they're having the discussion back and forth about what they should do with him. So on the one hand, she is this church going, I do this every year. I'm so selfless. This is what I do. I gotta get these cakes there. But at the same time, it looks like they're concocting some plan to do something that's unscrupulous. So we didn't really get a chance in episode one to talk about Afro-existentialism. And when I say that word, there's like a glazed look that goes over people's faces.
Is it?
We've talked about it so much that we get it. It's such a different way of thinking. You really have to deconstruct so much of what we've been taught.
And that can be very hard.
It's very difficult.
You know, well, tell them a little bit more about the basic things of Afro-existentialism.
Okay, so I'm going to try to simplify it as much as I can. So it starts with this philosophy called existentialism. One of the main principles of it is each person is a free and responsible agent determining their own development through acts of pure will. I saw instances where that did not ring true for me.
And let me point out that translates into how we operate on a daily basis, into the notions of pulling oneself up by your bootstraps.
Exactly.
That you should be able to pull yourselves up by your bootstraps and everything will be fine.
Right.
And if you're not fine, well, you're not
trying
pulling up.
Right. And what happens is that simple principle has been weaved into theology, sociology. So it's almost ingrained into our DNA and thinking. So when we're more apt to believe if it's not happening, it's because, well, we're not trying hard enough, or we're not good enough, or we're not dressed properly, or we don't have the right suit on, or our name is wrong, or our name is too this, or we're too this, or it's because I'm a woman, or it's because I'm too old, or whatever. And so I felt I needed to speak to that and came up with this notion of Afro-existentialism, stating that my belief was that free will alone is not a determining factor. It's not. You can want to will something. You know, we're in the midst right now of George Floyd being murdered by the police.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you use that philosophy, it's like, well, he could have used his free will. He didn't will it enough. Like, it's somehow his responsibility that happened.
Exactly. He somehow brought that on himself.
Right. And what happens is that we need to believe that, because our brains would crack in half if we realized the truth that it was nothing that he did or could have done, which means that there's nothing that we could do or could have done in a similar situation.
And
it's outside of our control.
And speaking to that crack, as I think that is why we like to say that everybody's having an Afro-existential crisis right now, because there has been a crack by seeing that man die.
Yeah.
And it has cracked everybody's mind, you know, everybody from Black people to allies, mm-hmm. for a moment.
Right. But I think also what it was, the COVID pandemic. And what people realized was that we are all in the same friggin' boat. So we may be on the Titanic,
yes.
And you may be in first class, but this boat is going to sink, and it doesn't matter where you are. So it's really It's a moment in time where it leveled the playing field. And I think a lot of people who did not feel vulnerable before suddenly felt, oh, I can get this. You know, I have insurance, I have a job, I have this, I have that, I can get this and die. I'm successful, but so it just leveled the playing field. And then you have this, we're home and we're sequestered, we're sheltering in place, we're quarantined, and this murder is being played on a loop. And I think just the combination, it was like something happened in people's psyche where they're like,
now, this might be a question for another time, but if we're all on the Titanic, mm-hmm. and some people are in first class and mm-hmm. some of us are in steerage.
Right. Is that a real level on the boat, steerage? Because I'll go with it. If it's steerage, what are you doing if you're steerage?
I feel like I've watched the movie Titanic, and I think that
there's a steerage department. Okay.
But I'm going to Google it.
Okay.
I'm going to Google it, and everybody Google it with me. The question for another time, Blaine, is... we're all in this together. We're all on the same playing field at this very moment. Who's going to get the lifeboats? And I think that's what everybody is trying to figure out. That's what happens after these moments. I think you begin to clamor and go, who gets the lifeboats? Get the lifeboats. And if we accept Afro-existentialism, you can say, oh, I know who would typically get the lifeboats, but let me act accordingly and
right.
to make sure
that I get on the boat.
That I get on a boat and everybody I need to be on a boat gets on a boat.
Right. Right.
But we'll get that again. That's down the line and probably act accordingly.
Okay. Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
Ladies and gentlemen.
So, you know, the first thing is that free will is not the only determining factor. And the second thing is that biases have always existed, right? Mm-hmm. So let's just stop trying to, I feel like we spend a lot of energy trying to convince people that biases exist. And there's too much historical data evidence to prove that it does exist. And so the energy that it takes to, it's like, using the energy that you would use to try to get someone to quit smoking. So there's tons of data saying that smoking causes cancer and that mm-hmm. it's not healthy for you and that it's hurtful to other people around you. And it's very difficult to convince people to stop smoking still, right? And what I'm saying is that instead, that can still happen. You know, there can be a campaign to say, okay, smoking is bad. But I don't feel like you and I are having enough conversations to figure out how to strategize when these biases are happening. And you may have figured out one way to do something. Like, we have conversations all the time and I'm like, oh my God, like, you've done something. And I'm like, that's a brilliant way to deal with that, you know? And we don't have enough of, like, those are the conversations that we need to have more of. And, you know, we're going to talk to, our guest is going to talk about bad faith in politics. Mm-hmm. And you and I've talked about, you know, you look at, you know, these places where the polling places are being shut down.
Right.
And there's nowhere to vote, or there's one place to vote, right? And there's all these parameters set up to prevent you from voting, right? Mm-hmm. And so, but what happens is that happens over and over and over and over and over and over again. So how many times does that need to happen before we say, okay, this is what they normally do. Mm-hmm. Now, how are we going to strategize our lives to make sure that the people in our community who want to vote, vote? Now, they may lose the ballots. They may, who knows what they're going to do. But let's make our objective of getting as many people to the polling place, wherever it is, you know, they're going to put it 50 miles away.
Right.
What's our plan to circumvent what we know that they're going to do? Do we need to bring long chairs? Do we need to have a barbecue? Do we need to have music playing? Like, if we're going to be in line for 3 hours or 4 hours, you know, do we need to do a mail-in ballot? It's a chess game, right? Yeah. So they have an objective and we should have an objective. And we can't get wrapped up into like, oh, it's so wrong, it's so bad. And so therefore they shouldn't do it, the right and wrong of it, because they're going to do it and we're going to be frustrated when they do it. So why not just make the assumption that this is what they're going to do? And they may do something totally different. That happens a lot too. You prepare for one thing and something totally different happens. But at least you can say, you know what? We came, we brought our lawn chairs, we had water.
We may not have gotten 100% of the people to vote, but we certainly got more than we would have had we not prepared.
Exactly. Exactly.
And there is a space for, there's always a space in the world for right and wrong, but that's a legal battle that someone is taking care of.
Right.
But in the...
Or not.
You know, they did a dry run in Georgia in this last election and showed their hand, you know, to be true to what you're saying. Now, if we accept that to be true, we got a couple more months before this big major election. We know that there are going to be no polling places in African-American communities. We already know that. And we know the excuses that they're using. So it's still very important to accept that that is happening.
Right. It's not right. What's the Whitney Houston song? It's not right, but it's okay. I'm going to make it anyway.
But it's okay. That's right. It's not right, but it's okay. It's okay. And sometimes I think people get overwhelmed because, you know, right and wrong often seems quantifiable. We all know what's right. We all know what's wrong. And some of this seems like maybe a mystery. Like, I could try all this, but will it work? You know, I think that you have to put together, if you can accept that things are happening, there are a lot of plans that have to be put on the table in order to overcome or circumvent the biases to circumvent the people that are trying to hold us down. You know, it's not going to be, I'm saying this to make the point of that it's not going to be one answer.
No.
And that's what right and wrong does. Right and wrong often produces sort of one good answer. You know, if we stick to right, we can all get behind right. But this is going to be, everybody has to do the work.
And it's on a large level, but on an individual day-to-day level as well.
Yeah, like we all have to sign these petitions. We all have to go out and vote, but we all probably need to make sure we are taking 5 people with us to vote, that we are taking care of the elderly people to make sure that they get there, to make sure that elderly people in your life are getting their ballots sent out, that they're filing for them, that frankly, one of the biggest things is making sure you're even on the voter rolls.
Exactly. Yeah. And our guest is going to talk about that and, you know, things to keep in mind, you know, 6 months ahead of time, a month ahead of time, a week ahead of time, and the day of.
And I'm excited for them to hear the interview.
Yeah, he's great.
Ladies and gentlemen.
So we have a great interview for you guys today.
Yes, we're going to talk to David Sparks. David Sparks is another one of the actors in the play who blessed us with his talents, but he's also one of the smartest people that I know, and he's an attorney.
And he's deeply involved in politics.
And we talked to him about bad faith in politics, but we took it a little further because I wanted to kind of figure out and come up with a solution, at least one solution, about what we could do with what's going on currently. So this is David Sparks.
Let's get into it.
Ladies and gentlemen.
So I think one of the most blatant examples of bad faith in this current administration, and really in this whole concept of democracy that we're supposed to be operating under, is that certain people have made it very clear that their goal is to make it harder for people to participate in the democratic process through what everybody knows as voter suppression, which can take many forms, but their entire path to staying in political power is to make it harder for people to vote. But it's very important for us to make sure that we pay attention to the Secretary of State election in every state, because that is the person in every state that generally decides how elections are going to go in each state. And it's one of those down-ballot offices that people don't pay a lot of attention to. We'll vote for governor, you know, we'll vote for senator, but Secretary of State is extremely important. And what we see now in those states that have secretaries of state that believe in the right to vote, voting access is better. And so that's crucial. So, for example, in we've seen in Georgia and Kentucky a number of polling places that have been closed. In Kentucky in this past primary, there was only one polling place for Louisville. And so that is a function of state legislatures. And so we have to really start, you know, this is years in advance, you know, looking at what's going on with our state legislatures. One thing that is important for us to always know is who our elected representatives are. And so there are several websites, there's several places you can go to say, who is my representative? And they will tell you who your person is. And a call from a constituent, you know, is important. And so make your feelings known about what's happening in terms of how districts are being drawn. Every jurisdiction is going to have a way for you to check what your status is. And so everyone should do that, because we've had instances of people being dropped from voter rolls, you know, intentionally or not. We've had other errors in terms of people's registrations that didn't reflect what they thought it did. So one of the first things we have to do is make sure that you check what your current registration status is. Then you should find out what your polling place is. It's very on point that you mentioned what to do a month before and what to do a week before, because polling places have changed. And so someone thought they knew what their polling place was a month before, but then a week before or 2 days before the election, it's somewhere else. The day before is, you really should have a, what is your plan for voting? So if you're going to have to take time off work, make sure that that's arranged. If you're going to need a ride, make sure that that's arranged. But you really should have a very specific plan on how you're going to vote. And be prepared, if you're voting in person, that it may be a long wait. Be prepared for that. You know, people talk about bringing lawn chairs, bringing water, but just to be prepared for what you're going to face. So to the extent that people can volunteer to work at the polls, that's a great thing. There are organizations that also need volunteers to help protect people's right to vote. I've done that several times. Now, the other thing that's really important and that's going on right now is everybody needs to fill out the census. And you can do that online, you can do that by mail, but that's also another tool that's used to allocate how many representatives a particular state has. And so in addition to using the census to allocate resources, the census is also used to draw those district boundaries. So again, the two things are, know who your representative is and contact them and make your opinions known in terms of any kind of redistricting that's going on, and definitely fill out the census. You know, it's really incumbent upon all of us to really be about the serious business of voting and doing whatever we can do to make sure that we're in position to cast our votes.
We would like to thank you guys for listening to the second episode of the Afro Existential Podcast.
Yes, thank you so much. And have a great day on purpose. Give me a beat.
Ladies and gentlemen.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the SUPs. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Suf's celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Suf's has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at SufsMusical.com.